Brian Had a Dream, 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000. Hello once again, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And welcome to the quest for 10,000. We thank you so much for downloading this episode and joining us once again as we join Brian on his journey to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. Before we get to the business in this episode, a little bit of housekeeping. In our last episode, I mentioned that we would be talking now about Brian's own foray into movie making as a continuation on a discussion about independent filmmaking and how film has become more accessible over the years so that anyone can do it. We're still going to talk about that, Brian, but when I made that comment, I hadn't looked far enough ahead on our recording schedule, and actually what we need to do first is talk about the beginning of the blockbuster season. So today, we're going to talk a little bit about Batman v Superman, and then we're going to pause, and then we'll come back with our immediate reaction, similar to what we did in our episode about Star Wars Episode 7.
Although, probably not nearly as euphoric.
Unlike with Star Wars, where we said we really weren't going to try to find out too much beforehand, it's not been the same yet for DC's biggest heroes and the sequel to The Man of Steel.
The boldest. What do they call it? They used to say it.
The brave and the bold. The world's finest. This may not be the world's finest superhero movie. Yeah. But still, it's I think, a movie worth noting, worth thinking about, worth talking about. And so I thought we would share, rather than our predictions for the film, Brian, what's your one prediction for the film?
Well, that by the end of the film, Lex Luthor is bald. He may be bald at the beginning and wearing a wig, but that his bald head will appear at some point during the 150-minute runtime of Batman v Superman.
So, again, not a whole lot of predictions, but I think probably what we're going to do, and maybe a little tongue-in-cheek, is share our hopes and some of our concerns for the film. And then we'll take a short break and come back and tell you whether those hopes were met or whether those concerns
Let me start with this. Let's start with, I mean, I'm partial to Superman. I like Superman. I love Batman, but Superman has always been my number one hero, superhero. But when you think Superman in movies, where on that list is Henry Cavill? Like, Christopher Reeve's number one.
Christopher Reeve is number one.
Is Henry Cavill number two?
Well, I'd probably put Tim Daly, the voice of the animated Superman,
number two.
And then I put Henry Cavill number three because poor Brandon Routh just can't escape.
Well, let me ask you this. Henry Cavill played Superman in Man of Steel and now is in this movie, pushing him out as a big superstar. Can you name one other movie he's been in? Absolutely not. Nobody can. Because and most people may not even know that that is who plays Superman. You don't even know his name. How is it possible he could play one of the most iconic characters of all time and no one even know? He could walk down the street and I wouldn't recognize him.
Actually, ironically,
I think he was in the Tumors,
but who might be the second best on-screen film star of Superman?
Dean Cain.
Is the man playing Batman who played George Reeves in...
Hollywoodland.
Ben Affleck.
George Reeves may be even above Henry Cavill.
And it could be. We don't know. So I guess maybe one of your concerns then would be...
There's not enough star power as Superman. He was fine, but he didn't distinguish himself in a way where you're like, I'm excited about Henry Cavill's Superman. No one is saying that.
So you're still concerned about if he's going to be able to hit the right notes.
I have no doubt that he won't.
Enjoyable.
But the problem is that... I think people are genuinely interested. The only buzz this movie has, I think, is people's curiosity about Ben Affleck as Batman. Outside of that, you take that away, and I think it's even worse than what it is right now. I think that's the one thing that people are kind of like a little curious about.
Well, here's maybe my biggest curiosity, and maybe probably my biggest concern too, is that I know the reviews, as you've said, they've been unkind. I really don't think the movie, I mean, there have been some bad, well-hyped movies. Like, Superman Returns, I hate it. Batman and Robin.
Everyone hates it.
We don't need it's to even talk about that. It's poisonous! So I don't think in this day there can be a movie, Superman, Batman movie, that would be as bad as those. I don't think it's going to be, like, just a horrible, horrible movie. I do think it's going to be a movie that's going to feel kind of like Man of Steel did, that's just not quite all clicking and together. But what my biggest concern is that it could be such a disappointment in some ways,
mm-hmm.
that all these other movies that could be coming in a DC universe, it could really derail all of that.
Yeah.
And that would be unfortunate, because I think
you're not a fan of Suicide Squad.
Well, that already looks like it's going to be a heaping pile of garbage.
I'm actually
optimistic. But I feel like stories, you know, Wonder Woman is an interesting character.
Set in World War One.
Aquaman is an interesting character.
Aquaman is not an interesting
possibly
character. He is not.
Cyborg.
Oh my gosh.
Shazam.
Cyborg is an interesting Cyborg is as boring as RoboCop. Have we seen this movie?
Well, we haven't seen
Flash?
Any of those.
Not, he's fast.
We haven't seen any of those movies nearly as much as we've seen Batman. And so my biggest concern is just simply that it'll derail the plans for that. And then we'll have to go through all this stuff again, and another whole reboot, and another whole casting, another whole...
Well, at that point, you and I will be old enough where we won't care.
Well,
and we'll be kicking it with 77-year-old Indiana Jones.
Perish the thought of me not caring about superheroes. So that's my biggest concern. I think my biggest hope for it is really what, hopefully, I think Affleck can bring to the table as far as Batman goes.
Gravitas.
And my hope, too, is... Jeremy Irons just doesn't mail it in as Alfred. So I think Jeremy Irons could also really...
We had this conversation.
He could be a good... He could be a person that these kind of DC has really needed. I think he's the type of actor who could add some dry wit, some humor. Kind of like I think how Lawrence Fishburne was supposed to do in Man of Steel.
You don't think he did?
Kind of as Perry White. Well, I think he did, but sort of that... Another character like that.
To me,
and I think that's something that these DC movies really need. That's really part of the DNA of the Marvel movies.
Well, because I think Marvel does well is that their
universe.
Secondary. Even this is from the comic books on, and the movies have taken this out of it. And you're right; it's in the DNA. The secondary Marvel characters are well-rounded, real characters. The secondary DC characters are stock figures with very... Like Perry White in the comics. What's he ever done? He's just there to like... I mean, he's like a poor man's J. Jonah Jameson. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's an interesting character. Perry White, not so much. And even Lois Lane, she's about as flat a character as you could possibly imagine, really. I mean, like, she really doesn't do much in the comic books. Maybe now she does. But her history has not been that well developed. Compared
yeah,
to
she's
like,
sort of been a damsel in distress for
yeah,
a long
she's a
part
plot
of
device.
History. And I think that changed. Probably.
It did change maybe in the reboots in the 90s. But, you know, Marvel never had that kind of... I mean, even like Aunt May was always a well-rounded character in a way that I think maybe the characters in DC have not been.
So again, your hope, maybe your concern too with this movie is that the characters could be a little more well-rounded.
Well, my concern for this movie is there's too many characters fighting over too little screen time, and we're not going to be as well acquainted with these characters as we need to be if they're trying to establish a whole universe.
And here's really, I guess, my other concern about this. I like Batman. I like Superman. I like superheroes. I want this movie to do well. There's a lot of part of me that is really rooting for this movie to do well. But my concern is I'm really kind of going to see this out of obligation.
Sure.
More than a real sense of excitement.
Yeah.
And that's different. If we were talking right now about X-Men Apocalypse, I'd be a little bit more excited. It might still be, again, a little obligation.
I don't know about that.
X-Men Days of Future Past, I was really excited about.
Yes, but you know what was great?
Even Avengers 2, knowing it wasn't going to be as good as the first one, I was still excited about seeing it.
Yeah, I was excited
even
about
it. Even Ant-Man, I was like, I was really curious, are they going to be able to pull this off? This one, though, really does feel more like, I gotta see this. This is a responsibility, you know, as even as a lapsed geek in some ways, this is really one that you just, you gotta go
see.
Well,
I mean, because it's the first time Batman and Superman have been on screen together and in a movie. I mean, they've been, you know, in various other medium. But, you're right. It doesn't feel like appointment television in a way. You know, it feels like, okay, I'll go
and I'll do that.
I think, you know, and that's where they took a big gamble when they cast Ben Affleck in the first place. I mean, the moment it was announced, it was controversial then. People were like, I don't know that has paid off, because I think that in the interim, and this may or may not factor in how the movie works, but Ben Affleck's public persona after his split with Jennifer Garner has not gone up. So I'm not sure how, if people are, you know, if they've soured on Ben a little bit, you know what I mean? And while that may not play in the movie, I think it does for a casual fan. They think, oh, Affleck, I don't know that I, you know.
Well, and really the funny thing, too, is you know, it started off, this was a sequel to Man of Steel. But really it's kind of a Ben Affleck movie.
It's Batman's movie.
As much as anything. Batman v Superman. So we started kind of this section of the podcast. You made the prediction Lex Luthor's going to lose his hair. So let's end this part before we take a break, and we'll go see the movie and come back. Prediction on Batman v Superman, who is going to win this great battle / legal case?
Wonder Woman.
Good answer. I don't have a better one. So let's stop there, and we'll come back and see if our hopes, concerns, and predictions were confirmed or denied.
All right, we're back, and Brian was right. Wonder Woman seems to have won, at least if you ask me. That's the case. Before we get to that, though, let's first just say general kind of overall impression of the film, Brian.
It was good. Not great. I think it had, overall, I would say the positives slightly outweigh the negatives.
I think that's fair. I think I'm probably a little bit more energized at seeing the movie now than you were. I think that's because, you know, my bias, I'll put right on the table. I really like, you know, stories that have me guessing, thinking what's coming next, anything that has a mystery or theory, conspiracy theory kind of stuff, and those sorts of things. And one of the things I actually think this movie did well, a place where positives generally outshone the negatives, is it really did plant the seeds for the Justice League movie that's probably coming next, some of the other, the Wonder Woman movie, that sort of thing. I thought it did that really pretty well. Now, there's a lot of other subplots and things that didn't do well, and even a couple of those planting of seeds that still sort of had you going all over the place. Yeah. I think the movie struggled a lot.
There's so many seeds out there.
Right.
I mean, they're throwing seeds every 5 seconds.
So a lot with pacing and still with tone. It was interesting to me. It wasn't until, and spoilers are going to be all over this part of our conversation, but it wasn't until Superman had apparently succumbed in the battle with Doomsday, Zod Doomsday, that the lighting of the movie alone was ever bright.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. And that's probably my biggest complaint with this, with the movie, and something I think we mentioned in the first part, is that in general, DC movies have been very dark. There hasn't been much light and energy. Superman is supposed to be the symbol of hope. They even say that in the movie.
Yeah.
And go back to it, set it in Man of Steel, to go back to
it
here in Justice
League.
Being
particularly dark.
Well, but it's kind of violent, dark, gritty, grim, you know, and so because of that, it didn't feel like one of the major kind of themes of the movie of Superman as this god, as this best bright shining light of all of us, that just didn't feel earned. Maybe because of the tone, maybe because just a lack of scenes showing Superman being this light. So that's my biggest sort of thing of it, you know, was kind of tone, pacing. But there was a lot to like about this movie.
No, there's a lot to like. I mean, I liked the fight scenes were good. I liked the end with Doomsday. I thought Doomsday was actually pretty cool. I liked Wonder Woman fine. I liked Affleck as Batman. You know, like you said, there was a lot to like. Now, I'm going to start with some stuff I didn't like. Lex Luthor, at some of the moments, brilliant, loved it, and then it would turn around and he would do something that I thought was just pathetic and just horrible. I mean, I felt like the character was all over the place. Like, it wasn't really a consistent character. Like, one minute he's this uber-smart Machiavellian, got it all figured out, and the next minute he's like, he's just rambling incoherently and he doesn't really know what he's doing, and it just...
And I wonder how much of that is intentional.
Maybe, but the character just, I never really, I didn't understand why, this movie showed us no reason why he would hate Superman. I mean, we had no reason for his immense hatred of him. No reason for him to dislike Batman at all. And he seemed to have some sort of like personal vendetta against Bruce too, which was only alluded to, but we really didn't understand that either.
Yeah, there was a lack of explanation of his motivation.
Yeah, like,
a little bit of a lack of maybe internal consistency.
Yeah.
I think it alluded to, and I'll go ahead and say, I think at the end it may be alluded to that there's another big bad somewhere on the board that we haven't seen yet.
Possibly.
And that maybe that's how Luthor gained some of the insight and knowledge
he may have. And I've read some reviews that talk about, we don't know what all he learned while he was in the Kryptonian drink or whatever. But I will say one thing, that the two main movies in this DC universe, because we only have two, we have Man of Steel and this, they don't treat secret identities very well.
Secretively. No, they do not.
They treat them as if they run through them, and within a movie, everybody knows who everybody is. Like, to me, that's only setting you up for putting yourself into a corner in two or three movies, because if all of them know it, then the whole world's going to know. And then because part of Superman and part of Batman is the mystery of which one is the real person. You know, and with Superman, he wants to be Clark Kent desperately, but he has to be Superman. And Batman wants to be Batman, but he has to be Bruce Wayne.
Well, and I think also the movie got close to actually hitting on exactly what you're talking about in terms of that characterization of both characters. But a little off, I think how I might describe it as an overall good performance, you know, using a sports analogy, I would say this movie won 28-24, and they left a lot of points on the field.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of points, you know, timely fumbles, couple of holding penalties, couple false starts. I can't say how much I really did enjoy Wonder Woman. The more I think about it, I think what I enjoyed most of all, and really a character in the movie, was the score by Hans Zimmer. I thought that was really good. There was some funky beat that came on when Wonder Woman showed up in the final battle.
But
that I just loved. Like, that hit me.
After that, like, as it was swelling to a crescendo, I felt like the music was taking over too much a little bit for that part. Now, the part with Wonder Woman, I like how they kind of, they alluded to, without directly doing it, the Wonder Woman theme song,
kind of made you feel that way.
Like they were trying to call back. Could it have that sort of 70s electronic vibe or tune where you could sort of feel that that's what they were trying to call
right.
back, which I like that. But I don't know. The movie, like, it's, what, 2.5 hours. It could have been under 2, and it would have been much better. Supposedly, they have 30 extra minutes they're going to add to make it R-rated, but unnecessary. Completely unnecessary.
Well, maybe that's part of what will explain Lex's motivations a little bit. Let's go back to that also. I did actually enjoy much of that performance. Again, there were little beats that were really good. Kind of some of his awkwardness. There was an allusion that part of his motivation was, you know, that he's got this obsession because of daddy issues. And this, you know, who is God, and God didn't protect me, so now I'm going to you know, show who everybody who you really are, and all that. And so there were some motivations, but I feel like it really did. It's almost like this is set up for a bigger plot down the road.
Sure.
And that's a difference between, I think, the Marvel movies and the DC movies too, in that the Marvel movies in and of themselves have felt a little bit more like complete stories and not just set up for the sequel.
No, they do all that in the tags after the movie.
Right, they do that in that. So I want to feel like this was a big extended, maybe post-credits scene.
They may have done the best they could have done in this environment. Again, with Lex, or Alexander Luthor. He may not be Lex. I mean, he may not be the Lex Luthor. He may be, you know. But when he was the smartest man in the room and, like, manipulating, like, those scenes, I love. Like, when he pushed Lois off the roof knowing that that would bring Superman. Love that. What I don't love is again, going back to Secret Identity, Lex knowing who Superman is, Lex possibly knowing who Batman is. That's a big, huge issue that's going to, loom over him, because he could very easily spill all of that to everyone. And I just feel like, I don't know. That feels like something that maybe should have happened 2 or 3 movies down the line, not right now. Going forward, in a Superman movie, because of the way this movie ended, with the death of Superman to Doomsday, which if you have Doomsday in a movie and you've read comic books, you know what's coming, or you know what they should get close to. But to have Clark Kent's dead, Superman you can bring back, I get that. Don't really see how you can bring Clark Kent back, you know, believably within this universe. Right. And without Clark, that means no Perry White. That means no. I mean, that means all those characters have to be reshuffled, which will be problematic for a Superman standalone film down the line.
Or it could provide some of the emotional source for that. And again, I think that's what I like about this movie, is it did leave me more excited for whatever's coming next.
Let me, in the very last piece, where we zoom in on the tomb of Clark, which I don't know who was in Superman's casket, but that's another story. We zoom in on the cart, and it starts to move, you know he's coming. I would have preferred them not to have done that, actually.
Well, the thing was, even in the score, you could kind of hear, you could start hearing a heartbeat.
Yeah, I could kind of prefer for them to leave
and this is the other kind of little, you know, some of the cool, there were Easter egg moments, like when you see Superman, you know, sprawled on the ground. That was basically kind of a their interpretation of the image from Superman number 75, Death of Superman issue. Yeah. There were also things, again, this owes so much to The Dark Knight Returns, Frank Miller's 80s seminal Batman.
That owes a lot to it.
Batman's armor, the fight they had. Superman gets nuked at one point, and that is a callback to that material. But also, I think that End Scene is a bit of a callback, in that The Dark Knight ends where you think Batman's dead, and at the very end, Superman's at his grave and hears his heartbeat and realizes he's really alive.
Yeah.
And so I think that was a little bit of an inversion there, trying to kind of do that. But you're right, again, it's one of those things where you kind of got what they're doing. It didn't make
it to. This movie, consistently, one thing it did consistently, is it underestimated what the audience would get on their own. Like, the people going to see Batman versus Superman, we understand that whether he's dead now or not, Superman is probably coming back. I mean, you're not going to kill that property going forward. We don't need you to show it to us that far. And again, they did that repeatedly. Like, the beginning, where they have this kind of a fake beginning, where it's almost like a mini origin story for Batman within the first 5 minutes, but then it's a dream. And this movie relied on dreams to fill in gaps. Anytime they back themselves into a corner where they're like, oh, but how will we tell the audience this? I know, we'll have a dream.
But then it stopped. Like, it was there for the first
hour.
And then they never
went back to it. That was Bruce Wayne's dream.
That was part of the logical inconsistency. In one of those dreams, the Flash appears, which again, that's an allusion to what's going to happen.
But I've heard that what happened,
movie?
Some people are saying that what happened is he had a dream, then he woke up, then he saw the Flash, then he moved on. So that the Flash was not a dream, it was the Flash from the future, which that I don't like that.
Well, but that's something that Flash does in the comics and that sort of thing.
He comes back in time a lot?
Yeah, he travels in time all the time. That was an inconsistent part to me. The other inconsistency, you know, kind of the thing that finally sends them into the fight, which Batman actually wins pretty convincingly. Then yeah. Wonder Woman shows up later and she's awesome.
Well, Clark has to have his girlfriend Bailey Bailey.
Yeah, that's true too. But the inciting incident is this scene in the Senate where it blows up, and it's part of it. It's actually part of what you're talking about with Luthor. Did Luthor orchestrate that?
Yes, clearly.
Okay, well, yeah, he orchestrated that, but how did he know kind of exactly that was what was going to happen?
Well, here's my thing, even with all that, okay? He orchestrated this guy at Wayne Enterprises, who was a victim of the first attack, who lost his legs. He kind of manipulated this guy over the past 2 years, apparently, to become this anti-Superman crusader. And so his plan was to have this guy go to a congressional hearing with this senator who, like, so was also manipulating into holding this hearing. He was going to have them have a hearing, invite Superman to come, and when Superman comes, he's going to blow up the Capitol. Okay, sounds like a pretty simple plan, right? But his whole purpose for doing this is never quite 100%. Batman already hated Superman. We know that. He was already ready to try to kill him. But this was the straw that was going to push him over the edge to call out Superman.
To me, what didn't make sense with that, too, was Holly Hunter's character, the senator, earlier in the movie had said, "I'm not going to approve you getting the kryptonite imported." So it's like he was mad at her for that. But
then he got
like,
an
what
if
she
had said,
what
did her saying that do? It didn't stop him at all. And the whole way in which he discovered kryptonite seemed a little inorganic. It seemed a little quick too. So,
yeah, I think that's maybe another good way to describe Marvel versus DC. DC's stuff has felt a little more
forced.
It's almost like they're making a plan, and you can see the plan they're making, but you'd rather it be a little more seamless. It's still a little rough around the edges.
Well, it's almost like in DC, Marvel is building a puzzle, but you can't see what the puzzle looks like yet. You're only seeing your part of the puzzle. DC, you see the big picture, you see what the puzzle is, and now you just feel it, and that's a lot less fun.
It is a little bit less of a fun movie, but again, go see it. There are
but
a lot of great
all things
cool
considered,
moments.
Considering the amount of pressure on this film, you know, I would say it was a solid B, if not B plus. All things considered, with everything it had riding on it, I mean, it wasn't the hit they made. It may not be the home run they needed, but it will definitely push things along down the line. Now, we'll see how much money it makes.
Yeah, I think we both agreed sort of 3 to 3.5 stars
is
what we
would
rate.
Not nearly as bad as the reviews are seeming to make you think it is.
Well, that's all the time we have. Do go see this movie. Tell us what you think at 10K Movies on Twitter, TENK, or Alan Bryan's blog, TENK, 10kmovies.com. Until then, we hope your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11.